What are your memories of your experience when you moved to Bloomington Normal?
Before going to Fairview, we stood a short time at Sunnyside. It was a white kid who invited me to the neighborhood. And again, being the kid that I was raised to take care of Andy the way I did, I was the new kid. I assumed this kid was trying to be my friend. And I got a lesson into not everybody's, you know, here to be friendly. I remember him asking my mother if I can come out to play. And they took me up to, it was a park behind Sunnyside that's still there to this day where basketball courts are at, and asked if I can come out and play. And back in the day when I was a kid, it was fenced in. It had like these tall fences and like a tennis court. He set me up, like he asked me to go play. I went out to go meet these kids. I'm thinking he's introducing me to the neighborhood. Come to find out, they closed me into this gate, and I ended up getting jumped by a group of kids in the neighborhood. They were throwing bottles of glass at me and stuff like that, and I ended up having to climb this fence to jump over and run home.
That was your first experience in Bloomington Normal, maybe?
That was my first experience racism? With racism and kids, you know, in Bloomington. And then moving to Normal, it kind of expanded just because, I mean, it's a little more diverse on this side of town in Bloomington. You know, it was always a little more diverse even when I first moved here. And then moving to Normal, that was when you're talking about I'm the only black kid in class. And that was always uncomfortable because I know at Fairview, my experiences there as a child, anytime anything happened, I was always looked at. Actually, first half day of school at Fairview, I had a confrontation. The teacher had put us into like groups to like introduce ourselves, and I had to go to the bathroom. And so I asked if I could go. I guess I walked through this kid's group, and he didn't like me walking through his little group, and he kicked me. And before I even reacted as a kid, I looked at the teacher first. Like, I looked at her like, he's kicking me. Do you see this kid kicking me? Like, and he kicked me again, and I'm studying looking at the teacher, and she did not react. She didn't do anything. And I'm just like, I'm just trying to walk to the bathroom. You see this kid kicking me? He kicked me twice, and I didn't react the first two times. He kicked me a third time. The kid was already laying down and sitting in his group. I sit down on him and punched him. And of course, that's when the teacher reacts and takes me to the office, and I'm looked at as this crazy kid. I got suspended the first half day of school. I just remember going home, my mom being like, how the heck do you get suspended on the first half day of school? You're not even doing anything besides saying your name. That was my first experience at Fairview.
How did it evolve after that?
It just kind of set the tone, and it made me be labeled as like this violent kid, right? The principal, I remember him just not listening to me. Like, I remember like being in the office telling him, like, this kid was kicking me, and I looked at the teacher for help, and she didn't move. And so I just defended myself. I didn't sit there and just pummel him like I was like this crazy person. I got labeled as a violent kid, you know. And so for the rest of my experiences at that school, if anything went wrong, like I'll never forget, I got suspended. They suspended me for 3 days from the half day of school, right? I come back from my 3-day suspension and I got called into the office. I just remember being sat in the room with like the principal and three other teachers, and they're questioning me, asking me these questions. They're like, hey, what is the posse? And I'm like, what? Like, what's the posse? And she's like, some kids said that you came at school while you were suspended and spray painted the posse on the walls at Chittick's. And I'm like, I don't even know what that is. Like, and why would I do that? I'm suspended from school. Like, that's not who I am. That's not even what I do. I'm not involved in any gangs. That's just not how I was raised. My family were military family. But they sat me in this room and questioned me. And I remember as a kid, I got angry because I felt like I wasn't being listened to. And I felt like they were just accusing me of something that wasn't real. And I played the role that they wanted me to play. You know, I turned into that violent kid. I stood up and I remember throwing my chair like, you guys aren't hearing me. I didn't do this. And I threw my chair and I walked out of the classroom. When I walked home, I remember coming to the house like, Mom, I'm suspended again. They think I spray painted this stuff on the wall, you know, and I never did. And the third incident at that school, I've always been very, very obsessed with history and social studies. Like, that's like my favorite subject. I love it, you know, to my core. I can read about it. I can study about it. I've always been like that since I was a kid, right? And so my fifth grade teacher, I'm not going to say his name. We'll just call him Mr. M. He didn't know that social studies was my favorite subject. And I didn't know as a kid that he was intentionally trying to make things hard on me. like he was giving me all these hard assignments, and because I thought it was cool, I was just getting excited. Like, you want me to build a fire hydrant out of a pickle jar? Fine. I did it. And not only did I build it, it's on videotape. I demonstrated with the class. I put out fires in the class with this little pickle jar. And now let's fast forward to Chittix. I'm playing basketball and I'm making a name for myself and becoming popular. And my little sister is going to Fairview at this time. You know, she's has the same teacher as me at this time, right? And my sister comes home with this 2-page letter from Mr. M. And it's written to me. It's basically a letter of him apologizing, saying that, hey, you never noticed this as a child, but I was intentionally trying to mess with you. I did things intentionally to try to get you upset. And for some reason, you never noticed it. Some reason you still excelled. For some reason, you still did your assignments. And my favorite video is still that video of you making that stupid fire extinguisher that I told you to make, because I was intentionally trying to give you the not cool project, because initially everybody had all these cool projects and demonstrations. He was trying to give me the tough.
So did you think it was a race thing, or did you what were you thinking?
I mean, he admitted to his racism. I mean, that's what he said in his letter. He thought that black people were stupid, basically. He didn't think that I was smart enough to catch it. And what was weird about the whole situation is, after, you know, I got his letter, and then even through high school, he followed me. He followed my entire career. I saw him at all my basketball games. He would be in the stands, and he would always come up to me and make sure he specifically shook my hand, and he would talk to me like we were best friends. But, like, I don't know. Maybe I was just the guy that impressed him, but I just remember being so disappointed. But in my mind, that made me learn that, okay, maybe I can't trust everything that maybe the person that's smiling in front of my face isn't necessarily the person that has my best interest. That was the lesson I learned from that.
So you've got two incidents already at Fairview that you're talking about. One, when you got kicked in class on the first half day of class,
yep.
Turning around to the teacher, she's not doing anything.
Yep.
And now you've got a teacher who openly admits that he was messing with you and that it was racist.
Yeah.
So as a kid that age, you've got people in authority, and to be blunt, they're white people in authority.
Right.
Does that change how you view?
Well, yeah, because you got to remember, again, before I moved to Bloomington, I came from an all-black area. All my teachers were black, down to my principal. So that's all I had ever really known until I moved outside of that environment, you know. And then to get here and experience that, it was a shock to the system, just because it was something new that I had never experienced. And so you're talking about new questions. I'm coming home to my mother like, Mom, like, what's going on? Like, why would they do that? When you're a 12-year-old, 10-year-old boy, that's when you learn that people look at you a certain way for no reason. And your whole life, you're questioning why, you know.
So you're at Chittix Junior High now. Yep. In general, are you having better experiences there than you were at Fairview?
Well, Chittix is where I actually first started meeting, you know, more black kids, you know, because Fairview was a fairly small school, fairly small area. You know, Chittix is where I met, like, you know, my friend Chris, the guy you interviewed him. You know, that's when I met. And then again, through sports, through basketball, you know, just because they're coming from other elementary schools. So I ended up playing for the team, and I'll never forget this to this day. I was getting picked up by an uncle of mine. I'll just say Uncle G, so I'm not using full names, just so I'm not putting everybody out there. But Uncle G is giving me a ride home, and you know how Chittix is located here. The police station's right there. You know, Pup 2. We're driving down by Pup 2. We got pulled over right in front of Pup 2, and Uncle G is driving a BMW with tinted windows. And we got pulled over because the officer said the tint was too dark on his car. And my Uncle G is looking at the officer like, what do you mean my tint is too dark? I bought it off the car lot this way. I didn't change or manipulate anything to this car to make it dark. I mean, as a kid, you're not understanding. As a black man, you've been pulled over with a nice car. You know, they didn't know that my Uncle G was a general manager of Rent-A-Centers and managed 10 stores and made a pretty nice chunk of change in the early 90s or whatever you want to call it. And so I can just remember the officer talking to my uncle and just kind of, you know, again, listening to the demeanor and how he's talking to him, like just blatant, like disrespect, like he's just not a man. And I'm just looking at him as a child, like looking out the window, just, man, like what is up with this officer, you know, because as a kid, what do boys play when they're playing outside? All the boys play cops and robbers, and all the boys play the good guy, you know? And so you're assuming that the good guy is there to do good things, you know. And if there's a misunderstanding, he's going to listen and, okay, I misunderstood or whatever, you know. He asks for my uncle's license. Uncle gives it to him, and he looks at me and asks me for a license.
And you're 12 years
old. I'm 12 years old. I'm literally wearing a Chittix Junior High School practice jersey. It says Chittix Junior High School across my chest. So what do? I look down at my chest like, can you not see that I'm a kid with a kid shirt on? Like, I obviously can't drive a car, and I obviously don't have a driver's license, but I'm tall, right? And the guy, officer, put his gun to my window and said, get out of the car. You look like a big boy. And my Uncle G is, at this point, he's screaming at the officer, leave that boy alone. Why are you doing that to him? Leave him alone. Leave him alone. He's just a kid. He's just a kid. The boy told you he doesn't have no license. He's a child. I'm picking him up from basketball practice. Like, you see it says Chittix on his shirt. But when I saw that officer's gun in my window, you're talking about the psyche of a 12-year-old boy. It's like watching a superhero melt in front of your eyes. You know, it's like, why is he doing this to me? You know, you're questioning, like, why does I told him I don't have a license. Can he see that it says Chittix Junior High School on my shirt? The school is right behind Pub 2. Like, you could drive there. Like, we're obviously coming from that area. But he pulls me out of the car, made my uncle still sit in his seat. My uncle still had to sit in his seat while he pulls me out of the passenger side. And he rummages through my Chittix Junior High School backpack until he finds my Chittix Junior High School ID. And that's when he let us go. And I just remember being like, why did he do that? And then, you know, staring down the barrel of a gun when you're 12 years old, you're thinking about death. Like, is he going to shoot me? Like, what is going on? Like, and why would he think just because I'm taller than him that I'm a threat? Like, I can't help that God made me tall. That was my first time coming from Peoria in an all-black neighborhood, what's considered a bad neighborhood or a violent neighborhood. I had never in my life had a gun put in my face.
How did the officer justify what he did to you?
He didn't. He just did what he did and let us go. It wasn't no apology. It wasn't nothing. And I just remember getting back in the car with my uncle. And that's when he had to have the adult conversation about being a black man, about how people are going to assume things about me that I'm not. Unfortunately, Calvin, you're dark skinned, too. So they're really going to think about you something that's not true, because when they see a very, very dark skinned man, they respond with fear first for some reason. I don't know why, but they respond with fear first. And that's been common in my life. And after almost 37 years of it, you start to get used to just filing things away. You know, this just the way things are. You know, people just don't see me. People just don't see you unless I'm making a tackle or shooting a basketball or entertaining in some type of way. You know, they'll see me then after a game when I'm playing with their kids, giving autographs or something like that. But once I take off that jersey or that label or whatever, like, I'm just blending in with everybody else. And that's just been the way of life. That was my first interaction with the officer. And that's one of many. And I never asked for them. Again, I've never been arrested. I've never even had handcuffs put on me, ever. But I can go through gobs and gobs of story of being harassed for no reason.
Before we got going, you were telling me about another thing that happened at Chittix when you were, in the classroom and you had to watch Roots.
It was a school-wide thing. Everybody had to watch this thing, which, again, was a shock to me because I had watched Roots before, but I watched it with my family. My grandmother was the type of person where she was real big on imagery. So anytime there was anybody black on TV, she would just be like, hey guys, there's black people on TV. Come sit down and watch this. Like, cause she just understood the importance of little kids absorbing images of themselves on TV. So, and my grandmother showed us parts of Roots. I had never been forced to watch the whole thing just because it's so many different crazy things that go on in that movie. Junior high was the first time I'd ever had to like watch it. I was only black kid in class, you know. I understand that those people are actors or whatnot, but they're portraying something that happened that was real. You know, that was a representation of me. And so I would cry. I was watching this movie. I remember when they first was telling us we were going to watch the movie, and I explained it to my mother or whatever, and telling her how uncomfortable I was, because it's like, Mom, I'm the only black kid in class. Like, I don't want to feel uncomfortable watching slaves on TV when I'm the only black person in class. She just tried to tell me to do my best to just stay focused and not pay attention or whatever. I had to do what I had to do because I was at school type deal or whatever. But, of course, the movie starts and you're in the classroom and things happen. everybody kept staring at me. Every time I would anything bad would happen, like they would turn and eyeball me and just kind of waiting for my reaction. And it was just the most uncomfortable feeling. Like, and I tried my best. I stayed in class. I took my notes. I tried to do the best I could. But I would cry, and the kids in the classroom would tease me for crying. You know, they would ask questions like, "Man, Calvin, why are you so upset? Why, you know, why does that bother you so much?" And I'd just be like, "Those are my ancestors. That's my people. That's the history of this country. Like, it bothers me, you know? Like, I'm watching people be whipped." I'll never forget, it was, we got to the point where Kunta Kinte tried to run away, and he gets captured or whatnot, and they tie him to a tree, and they chop off his foot so he doesn't run anymore, you know? And that scene, like, made me explode. Like, I was bawling, like, because I'm just like, man, you know, because from my standpoint, I'm watching a guy trying to run for his freedom, and I'm seeing him get tortured and beat. And I'm sure as kids, you're not understanding the imagery that's being programmed in your head, because my classmates, they see their ancestors as in people of power. You know, they don't necessarily see themselves as the slave. They don't see themselves as a slave, so they can't even relate. But when Kunta Kinte get his foot chopped off, of course, everybody's eyes darts at me. And I just stood up, and I remember telling Mr. H, I can't do this. Every time anything happens, people look at me, and plus, this is just making me emotional. Like, I'm watching Roots for the first time around all white people. You know, I don't have that emotional support of my family sitting in the living room telling me everything is okay and explaining things further to me, you know, so I can understand from my little 12-year-old brain. But Mr. H was a really cool teacher. I appreciated him at the time seeing my hurt, understanding that it bothered me, not forcing me to sit there and watch it. And he didn't get upset that I got upset and walked out of the classroom. He actually walked me to my counselor's office. We sat down and discussed, and I'm just like, I can't do this. This is too much. This is traumatic. Like, this is bothering me. Like, and so they gave me this assignment to do an alternate project on my family tree. And I mentioned before, you know, my great-grandparents, at least my great-grandmother, is still alive to this day. And so you're talking at, you know, 1996 at the time or whatever. And they give me an assignment to do, you know, alternate project on my family tree so I don't have to sit in classroom and be tortured, basically. And whenever they would watch the movies, I would go sit in my counselor's office and work on my project, basically. But what was a really cool experience that happened for me out of it was my great-grandparents took me to Cleveland, Mississippi. And I got to see the actual plantation that my family came from. Like, it was the most mind-boggling experience I ever had in my life, you know, because, again, once you're one year kid, but to see when we arrived to the city of Cleveland, Mississippi, and it's a small town and a small farm town at that. And it was the first time I had ever been to a town where most of the people was all black, you know, and I'm sure they were because of sharecropping and everything afterwards or whatever. But we get there. You see the wheels turning in my grandmother's head, you know. You can see her change and go back. She's seeing places that she can remember, you know. And I'll never forget, we get to the town. First thing she does, she hops out of the van, and she had a little sandwich bag, and she picks cotton and puts it in the sandwich bag. She's crying, putting cotton in the sandwich bag as we get to the lands of where our family's from. First place they take me to is to see the big house. And that was when I learned why they call it the big house. Like, you're talking about wealth. Like, I mean, when you see how much wealth slaves build for a family for free, it's crazy. Like, this house was so big, it had hundreds of rooms. 1996, not only did this house, they kept it original, they ended up turning it into an actual hospital. Like, that's how many rooms that this place had. To see the landscape of the lands, like how many acres and acres and acres and land of land that existed between the big house and where the slaves actually started to, you know, live when they became sharecroppers. Like, I just remember being a kid being like, oh my gosh, like, no wonder how people could get lost out here. You know, you could hide somebody out here, or no wonder why they never knew slavery ended. And I got to see the bag that my grandmother filled up full of cotton. Like, my grandmother's all of 5'2", you know. So to see her hold up this bag above her head and see how much slack was behind it after slavery and we became sharecroppers or whatnot. And this is the house. She showed me the house that her family had built or whatever. It was falling over at the time, you know. But she's like, yeah, this is where I lived at.
So when you're seeing all that and you characterize it as very cool, how did that change how you viewed your grandparents or how you viewed a lot of things?
I saw their strength from where they came from to where we were in Peoria. Like, my grandmother ended up, even though we grew up poor, she owned her house. You know, not only did she own her house, she owned two other houses that she rented. And she, my grandmother also was a business owner. Like, she owned a restaurant in Peoria called Timmy Joe's Lounge that lasted for several years until, you know, she had a bad partner or whatnot, and they ended up having to sell it. But we had this restaurant in my family from, I had to be 5 years old until I was in junior high school. So you're talking about a couple of years. I mean, we even had like weddings and stuff there at this place. So to see where they came from, to see what they built was, I mean, that was really cool for me. And it also just opened up my eyes to different truths. Like, I saw that these people weren't just like slaves and savages or whatever, people who were unintelligent. Here are people that have skills and are builders and can create anything, something out of nothing. Basically, they're creating things out of nothing, because even when you're talking about freed slaves, like, it wasn't like they were given the capital to build. They really had to work to gain.